Welcome back in. Hour number two, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Encourage you to download the podcast. We're on track to set an all-time record in September for podcast downloads. You can search out My Name Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton. And you will be able to listen to anything, including the first hour of the show as we broke down the situation at the border. Talked about Biden refusing to answer questions from Prime Minister Boris Johnson, among others, as we have continued to track down. We'll also update you on our interview request for Dr. Fauci. All of that coming your way. Plus, Fauci said that the coronavirus was going to be feasting on the big college football crowds that we saw a few weeks ago. Does the data support that being true? We will discuss all that and more. But bringing him in now, we had David Zweig on, I don't know, probably a month ago or so to talk about masks on children and whether or not they made sense based on the statistical data. And by the way, his article said that did not make sense. He's now got a really interesting piece up that I'd encourage you guys to all go read, looking at the data. And the data in particular is surrounding hospitalizations and whether or not it's a reliable metric. And the title of the piece at The Atlantic is "Our Most Reliable Pandemic Number is Losing Meaning." And the subheading is "A New Study Suggests Almost Half of Those Hospitalized with COVID Have Mild or Asymptomatic Cases." You hear about this hospitalization number all the time. David Zweig joins us now. David, how could that be true, and what did you uncover as you reported this article that we just referenced?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, during the pandemic, we generally have used three different metrics for kind of tracking what's happening. There's cases, but the problem with using cases is it really depends on who is tested and when. And that can greatly affect, you know, what we're seeing. And also, cases doesn't mean that someone is sick. It just means that they're infected. On the flip side, you have tracking mortality, which is finite, but it's also a really a lagging indicator, and it doesn't count people who perhaps were really ill but recovered ultimately. So hospitalization numbers have been looked at as a really kind of good Goldilocks, metric, that it's definitive. Either you're in the hospital or not, and it tracks people who ostensibly are really ill. However, what I found, my reporting, and I write about this study, which is in preprint, which means it isn't yet peer-reviewed, but the authors of the study have a really strong track record with other publications. And what they found is that in this year, in 2021, roughly half of all COVID hospitalizations are for mild or even incidental or asymptomatic cases.
So if we're that's a really interesting data point. So roughly, I'm looking at the New York Times board right now. They say that 90,000 people right now are hospitalized with COVID. Based on what your data suggests from that preprint article, roughly 45,000 of those people would have legitimate COVID cases. The other 45,000 may be incidental. They might be relatively insignificant in terms of how severe they actually are.
That is correct. That is what these authors found. So your listeners may be wondering, well, how is that possible? Why would people be in the hospital if they're not really sick? And there's actually a good reason for it. The first is that hospitals are, it's not like necessarily a nefarious reason. Hospitals have to report to the federal government every patient who tests positive. And most hospitals in the country are doing a universal screening. On anybody who is admitted to the hospital, you are tested. So if you have someone from a car accident, you know, or someone with a broken foot or appendicitis, they're in the hospital for something totally unrelated to COVID, but in order to be admitted, they have to be tested. The test comes back positive. Boom. That gets checked off as a, quote, COVID hospitalization. And then another category of patients are people who showed up with with COVID symptoms, but they're relatively mild, and perhaps an emergency room doctor said, well, let's admit this person anyway for observation because they have some underlying conditions, where, you know, just, or the patient's complaining of a subjective feeling of shortness of breath, even though their blood oxygen level is very high and seems normal subjectively. So, and then their illness never progressed into anything beyond mild illness. So you have these two large categories, and it's pretty astonishing, but they found that they are comprise approximately half of all COVID hospitalizations. And what's interesting about this study, I had written a number of months ago about two separate studies on pediatric hospitalizations, and they used a totally different methodology, and they came to very similar conclusions with their findings. I think it was roughly 40 to 45% of the pediatric admissions were also deemed, well, you know, incidental or largely unrelated to COVID.
David, it's Buck, and I was about to ask you about the pediatric COVID hospitalizations. Because we just mentioned this before you came on, there was a lot of news coverage of that in August, you know, right before the opening of schools and all the talk about what kind of mitigation measure should be in place and should it all be in-person learning and all those things. All these news stories, kind of breathless news stories about an all-time peak in COVID hospitalizations. And I'm looking at one here, you know, from CNBC from just last month, where they were saying that they were looking at an absolute peak for the week ending August 22nd, when they thought that this was the highest, I think it still is the highest they had seen, of 300 admissions a day. So from what you're telling us, it really could have been actually more like 150 a day nationwide who were hospitalized with real with COVID as the primary reason for admission.
Correct. That based on, so we now have, that I'm aware of, three separate studies. The pediatric studies, they did a method where the doctors did what's called a retrospective chart review. They actually meticulously poured through each chart of the patients one by one. And this is in two different hospital systems in California. Whereas the researchers on this current study, which was for an adult population, they used sort of data analysis, and they simply looked at the metric of anybody who is a COVID hospital admission, and then they cross-referenced that with those patients, how many of them had a blood oxygen level below 94%, which is the NIH's definition of severe COVID. And then they also included, did any of these people get supplemental oxygen? And they deemed that sort of a moderate case of COVID. So, and what they found was that roughly half of these people who are COVID hospitalizations did not get supplemental oxygen and did not have an oxygen level below 94%. And what they're saying is, if you don't have either of those criteria, you don't have severe or even moderate COVID.
We're speaking to David Zweig. He's got a piece in The Atlantic, Our Most Reliable Pandemic Numbers Losing Meaning. I got to ask, David, are you going to dig into the death data on COVID as well? Because from the very beginning, there has been a concern, a theory, however you want to frame it, there's a portion, and I do not pretend to know what it is, but a portion of the COVID mortality that would be people who died with COVID instead of from COVID. Because when we're talking about hospitalizations, you've already found that there are some major studies that are looking like maybe half of people this year who have been hospitalized with COVID, they were hospitalized with, not from, right? Are you going to look into that same distinction? Have you seen any data about that distinction when it comes to death from COVID as it's coded at hospitals across the country?
Yeah, it's obviously, that's a really good question. I've talked with a number of researchers about this, and the reason why no one has really come out with something on this is that death certificates are like apparently a really kind of noisy, messy, sloppy thing to look at. And oddly, so like hospital admissions, things are, you know, there's electronic records, there's charts. But the way death certificates are written and put together, there's like an enormous amount of kind of discretion on who's actually filling the thing out. There are some people who have looked at this, and there is a pretty wide range of how the certificates are filled out. So it's something that would be very challenging to come up with a definitive answer in the way that these hospital admissions studies have come up with a more definitive answer. With that said, of course, this certainly begs the question that if you are finding this in the hospital admissions, one would assume there's possibly at least some correlation with what are deemed COVID deaths. It's just that for whatever reason or reasons, people have not wanted to invest the resources and actually really digging into it, because from my understanding, it's not something that can be done just using a simple sort of data analysis the way these researchers did on this hospitalization study.
David, we talked with you about masking in school children. If anything, this has just continued to be such a tempestuous and high temperature related debate. Have you found any more evidence that supports the idea of masking children in schools since you last talked to us and said, hey, there's no real scientific evidence that this makes sense?
I have not seen anything since then that I find particularly compelling. And as I probably mentioned, with you guys last time, again, what I would urge everyone to do is to look toward Europe, and where you see we have basically a real world experiment taking place. This is that for me, what I find most persuasive, more so than a study that's done, that has all sorts of noise, that kind of built into it and limitations. Observational evidence is pretty powerful. And of course, countries are not apples to apples in the same way that, different states or communities aren't. But when you have a variety of countries that each of them have different vaccination rates, different case rates presently, and different mortality rates, per capita, it's all over the place. And yet the unifying factor is that none of them are masking little kids.
And I just want to reinforce that, because what you're saying, I feel like, doesn't get enough attention. Basically, all of the Western democracies in Europe, in other words, peer countries of ours, are making the decision that masking kids in schools doesn't make any sense.
That's correct. There are different age cutoffs. Some of them are no one's wearing a mask basically all the way through, the end of high school, except perhaps in hallways or other certain circumstances. There's another handful of countries where it's up to age 12. And then there are a bunch of countries where it's under age 6. And that corresponds with the World Health Organization, with what they have repeatedly said, which is we do not want kids under age 6 wearing masks ever, period. And they have stuck by this guidance for, again and again. So they haven't wavered from it. So the United States really is an outlier in that. And if I may, it's good that you brought this up, because I think both of these things dovetail with each other. The idea of risk to children, that some of hospitalization numbers, for example, if we're looking at them specifically for kids, that drives a lot of the public conversation and ultimately policy. So if we have a misunderstanding as the public about risks to kids, well, that misunderstanding then, to me, you follow the bouncing ball, then goes toward different mitigation measures that people may feel are necessary as a side point of whether they work or not, but just people saying, hey, we better do anything we can. So this isn't to say that there aren't some masks that do work in some circumstances, but the evidence to me is very, very thin that a mask mandate of little kids provides much benefit, if any at all. And that's what that large study talked about. So I think that these two issues are very much intertwined when we look at these sort of risk metrics and how they then lead to different mitigation policies.
We agree. And David, we appreciate the data and fact-based analysis and presentation here for all of us. David Zweig, folks, writing a piece in The Atlantic on hospitalization metrics. And David, please come back. Take a look at the death data, if you would, please, and come back and talk to us about it.
I'll try.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it. All right, Ken's a radio listener in Arkansas. He's also one of those guys that is seriously affected by rainy weather. On those days, he's just in a ridiculous amount of pain. Or he was, I should say. Nowadays, he's simply pain-free. His secret? He's been taking 3 packets a day of Relief Factor for about 3 months now. Even he's amazed at how much his pain has decreased. He's one of many listeners benefiting from Relief Factor, because Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free product which addresses joint pain, knee, hip, back, neck, and shoulder pain. It was created by doctors based on scientific research. Relief Factor helps your body reduce pain and inflammation associated with aging, exercise, and everyday living. My dad takes it every day, and he is out like a beast on the golf course a lot. And Clay's wife is taking it. Clay, amazing results.
Yeah, she's in incredible shape. She's going to live to be over 100 years old, but she works out so hard. She wants to take care of pain and aching as well. And those, Buckstad, my wife, are part of the hundreds of thousands of people taking Relief Factor, and 70% of them go on and order more. Right now, you can join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF, 1995, less than $20. 3-week quick start developed for you. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF, Relief Factor. Feel the difference.
How's our driving? Call and let us know at 1-800-282-2882. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Thank God for President Biden for putting us on a different course where over 150,000 people have been fully vaccinated and more vaccinations. That's back on the uptick.
Indeed. Thank God for Biden with the 150,000 vaccinations, Nancy Pelosi says. Welcome back to Clay and Buck Show.
That President Biden, 150,000.
It's not like she just says it, Clay, and corrects herself. I think it's fair to say Nancy Pelosi and a lot of the Democrats, not big numbers people.
They're not good at math. They're big numbers people. Like $3.5 trillion is a big
fair
number.
Point.
They don't understand the significance of the numbers and what that can represent to an overall American economy. Now, from a budgetary perspective, it appears that there's going to be enough moderate Democrats in the House and the Senate that the Bernie budget bill is right now in the process of going up in smoke. I think we're going to be talking about that as a key story next week. But I just want to encourage everybody who just heard David Zweig. The article that he wrote is in The Atlantic about hospitalizations. One of the things that I would encourage all of you out there, if you have friends and family members who are in the grips of what I would call COVID fear porn, I would encourage you to share clips from the show that are reasonable and rational and compare it to the histrionics that you see on CNN and MSNBC and just say, hey, here's a fact-based discussion about hospitalization numbers and why they may very much be inflated, and share it with people. Share it with people and help us win the battle for normalcy. In the meantime, I got to tell you about a real American hero. His name is Scott Noakes. As a kid growing up in New Jersey, he dreamed of joining the Marine Corps. After 9/11, he enlisted. His parents had to accompany him because he was only 17. He went to boot camp right after high school, the definition of determination. He was overseas for 2 tours serving in Afghanistan. While there, he lost his legs and eyesight due to complications from an infection. Tunnel to Towers recognized Corporal Noakes' sacrifice with a mortgage-free smart home made possible by your donations. Home was custom-designed for his needs, everything, automated doors, automatic cabinets. Scott's home has a stovetop that can be raised and lowered if he's cooking in his wheelchair, all done for him because of you. There are many more heroes who need your help. Donate $11 a month at Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. One more time, help us take care of these heroes at T, the number 2, T.org.
Welcome back into the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are going to be talking to you about Fauci and all of the things, all the situations going on right now across the country when it comes to COVID and lockdowns and all the rest of it. We just spoke to David Zweig about the data. I mean, that's a really important circumstance, because first of all, hospitalization numbers you see are clearly very inflated, clearly very much higher than they should be. I think you're going to find that the death numbers as well. Now, this is not to say, oh, you know, it's not that we haven't had 600,000 people die of COVID. It's 100,000 or something crazy like that. But maybe it is 20 or 30% overstated, and it's important we get these things right. It's important working off of data sets that really reflect the reality. And Clay, on the Fauci conversation around college football, has everyone from the college football games tested positive for COVID? Because I think we were led to believe that it was a super spreader event. Not the Emmys, though. The Emmys is exempt from COVID.
The Emmys, Barack Obama's birthday party. I think what we're finding out, Buck, maybe, is that it's a really sophisticated, educated crowd that is showing up for the college football games. So I want you to listen to this audio here. From MSNBC, Dr. Fauci, who we're going to discuss his response to being invited on our program at the top of hour three. And trust me, you're going to want to get your popcorn for that discussion. But Dr. Fauci had the time to go on with Joy Reid, probably the most dishonest person with a television show anywhere in the country right now. And that's saying something when you consider who's got shows on CNN and MSNBC. But listen to Joy Reid talking about how appalled she was at the crowds of college football fans. And then Dr. Fauci talking about how he was incredibly troubled himself based on those crowds. Listen to
what was your sort of immediate thought when you saw all of those fans packed into stadiums in Texas, Wisconsin, and elsewhere? As soon as I saw it, I thought COVID's about to have a feast. What did you think?
I thought the same thing. I think it's really unfortunate. I would hope that most of the people in that stadium were vaccinated. And even if they were, the close congregate setting, they should have been wearing masks.
The congregate setting. It's amazing, Clay. This guy on cue tells not just MSNBC hosts and CNN hosts, but their audiences what they want to hear all the time. That's how I know he is the worst. He's the worst. You know how much I despise. Well, yes. Apparently I could say it now because he's definitely not coming on our show.
Yeah.
Flat out turned down.
All right. So I think it's important. All right. You just heard Dr. Fauci say that college football crowds were going to be a feast for COVID. That's what he said. A feast. And that was because people weren't wearing masks. They were tightly packed. I went and looked at the data because it's now been over 2 weeks, right? Everybody says, just wait 2 weeks. It's now been over 2 weeks since college football opener, okay? Here's the data. In Florida, after Dr. Fauci said, it's going to be a feast. Big stadiums, you guys know, Florida State, Florida, Miami, Central Florida, South Florida, millions probably of fans that have gone to games all over the Southeast. Well, in Florida, cases dropped 44%, Buck, in the 2 weeks since the season started. In Tennessee, this is from the New York Times COVID data, by the way. In Tennessee, 43% decline in COVID cases since the season started over the last 2 weeks. 35% decline in Georgia. 32% decline in South Carolina. 30% decline in Mississippi. 22% decline in Arkansas. 23% in Alabama. 9% in Texas. Every single SEC state where millions of people have gone to college football games has not led to a feast of COVID as Dr. Fauci predicted. Every single SEC state, Buck, is in fact down. By the way, that's NFL stadiums now too.
You want to wonder, I mean, are they putting some kind of antiviral in the IPAs or something?
Maybe,
I mean, what's going
on
here?
Maybe football cures COVID. That's one hypothesis.
Because if Fauci's going to go on TV and say stuff like that, we all have to remember that he picks and chooses who he will throw political spitballs
at. That's right.
It's very clear. He's a little totalitarian fraud. I don't just say this because I disagree with some of his policy prescriptions. I see the way he has maneuvered the entire time in such a way that he would be in keeping with what the Beltway set wants to hear, with what the apparatus of left-wing Democrat control and the Biden administration expects him to say. He always plays the part that you have never, in this entire pandemic, seen a truly critical article or monologue about Fauci on a single left-leaning outlet. Tells you everything you have to know. This guy is not some medical genius. He's a bureaucrat, does anything to get ahead, leftist. And that's it. And I mean, people that don't see that yet, I don't know what else has to be provided to them, because otherwise, why take a shot at college football, Clay, but not say, yeah, but you know, the U.S. Open tennis that happened recently, because Fauci's fancy friends, his cocktail party buddies, go to see tennis at the U.S. Open. He doesn't think it's quite the same thing when it comes to SEC football games.
That's right. And again, I think it's the duty of people like us, but reasonable, honest, direct people in the media to hold the quote unquote experts accountable for what they say when it's proven to be untrue. And this is significant for people out there because it suggests that you can go to outdoor events at a minimum, tightly packed outdoor events at a minimum, and not have to worry about COVID. You don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to worry about 6 feet, which we all know is totally made up in terms of the social distancing impact. In other words, as we've been saying for a while, the Emperor Fauci is wearing no clothes here, and the data doesn't in any way support what he is trying to argue. And we can't just let him say that COVID's going to feast on all these right. college football fans, and then most people are going to forget it and pretend that it was never an argument.
If there was accountability, if there was really going to be accountability here, Fauci should go on TV, which he does every 5 minutes. I mean, yes. You know, he's on TV more than either of us, and we work in the media, Clay. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. This guy, you'd think he's with the scientists, you know, figuring out new cures and treatments and helping the NIAID under the NIH umbrella do great. No, instead he's showing up, you know, high-fiving Chris Cuomo and hanging out with Matt Au. And this is what this guy does all
writing
the time.
Writing books.
Should get writing books or having books written for him. He puts his name on. You would think that he would at least be willing to come out now and say, wow, you know, I think we overstated the risk at those college football games, but he never admits he's wrong. It's always that's what the data said then, and the data evolved. The only exception to this is when he flat out admitted, or rather, I actually don't believe he admitted this. I think this is another lie on top of the admitted lie, that he said masks don't work because he didn't want us to take all the good masks in the beginning of the pandemic. It was for our own good. The notion, Clay, of the noble lie from the left on COVID is something we're going to hear a lot more of. They actually now embrace pretty openly that if they have to mess with the numbers, if they have to exaggerate, if they have to lie about the risk to kids, they're doing it for our benefit. So it's okay. There's no accountability baked into the system. We've got a lot of folks on the lines, 800-282-2882, if you want to call in. I think we can get some of that going. And then, Clay, we could tell everybody in just a few minutes about Fauci's response to our very polite request to come on this enormously listened to radio show.
You know, we tried to be as honest and forthright and give Dr. Fauci a time to come and talk to the biggest audience in radio anywhere. And Fauci's doing audiences everywhere. You just heard him on MSNBC with Joy Reid. We finally got a response from the Fauchster, and I think you're going to want to hear it at the open of the third hour of the program. You're going to enjoy it. I'm just going to tell you. And in the meantime, if we've learned anything since 2020, it's that there's nothing quite as important as a powerful immune system. 20 years ago, Dr. Dennis Black of Texas invented Texas Superfood. It is the original superfood. We met Dr. Black years ago, and we know that he has 55 vine-ripened fruits and vegetables, plus probiotics and digestive enzymes that you can build your body's defense from the inside out. That's what Texas Superfood is. We learned that your immune system's job is to detect, deflect, and destroy bacteria we come in contact with, and that Texas Superfood boosts your immune system better than anything else on the market. Your grandma, guess what? She told you to eat your fruits and veggies, but with busy schedules, fast food out there, most people don't, which is why, Buck, people need Texas Superfood. How do they get it?
Look, if you can't, want, or don't eat all your fruits and veggies every day, you need Texas Superfood. It was made for you. Here's how you can start boosting your immune system for under $2 a day. Go to TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. Again, that's TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55.
Wow.
There's nobody better. Listen to that oratory. Listen to that articulation. Listen to the intelligence just overflowing with cranial cavity.
Passing the torch of wisdom, even to this very day. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We told you we had some calls. Just remember, we're going to tell you about Fauci's declining to come on this show officially. He's got time for every other show in the country. He's got time for podcasts with, you know, five libs wearing triple masks as they go to sleep at night. He'll do anything. He will not do this show. So we will tell you about what exactly he said there and then also discuss where he is appearing and some of that coming up. Also, some more updates on the border in the next hour. But our buddy Dr. Paul got a lot of attention when he was on the show last week. He was in Toronto. He's back in Washington, D.C. He was formerly in HHS under the Trump administration. We did a little bit of digging to find out more about Dr. Paul. Dr. Paul, what do you got for us today?
Hey, thanks, Clay and Buck, and it's Paul Alexander. I'm so honored and privileged. Look, I'm listening to you guys, and it's an exceptional show. I want to say it this way. I wanted to make the argument that the nation has to consider their children already vaccinated and immune. And I'll make my case quickly, shortly. But I wanted to follow up with something you said. Look, I had my own links and dealings with Dr. Fauci, and I'm not going to get into his service and all of that. But I'll say this. On COVID, for the last 19 months, he's been flat wrong on everything. I think he's one of the most illogical, irrational, and actually at some points absurd. I am a scientist. I'm an academic scientist, and I work with many. We cannot understand anything he says from day to day. And that is, it blows my mind the attention he gets, because he had leadership positions in Trump, and he has a leadership position in Biden. And I just don't understand it. Now, here's what I wanted to tell you today. I looked at all of the evidence, me and the researchers that I work with. We looked at all of the global settings, every nation, every location in terms of lockdowns. Every single lockdown failed. We looked at every location in the world that implemented a school closure, including across the United States. Every single school closure failed to stop transmission, failed in every possible way. We examined mask mandates in every state in the United States and in every country in this entire world. Not one location did a mask mandate work to stop transmission. Every single policy that the task force under Trump implemented, and Trump implemented their policies. These were not Trump policies. He was guided by Fauci and Burks, etc. Every single policy failed. Everyone, it was a catastrophic failure for anyone to ever go back and try to blame Trump. I sit back and bristle because he took tone and guidance from them. Yes, he was the boss, but he needed their technical input, and they failed him. They misguided him, and they're even misguiding whomever right now, Biden, because this present administration is a complete failure. But I wanted to go back now to what I said. No child in America must be vaccinated with these vaccines, none. And we must consider them already immune and actually vaccinated. Why? Children, the infection fatality rate is close to zero for children, close to zero, statistical zero. Children don't readily acquire it, don't readily spread it. They do not get severely ill readily, and they do not die. And that is not me making this up. This is data, and the reality is I looked at the evidence to try to understand, is there a molecular or biological explanation? And what I found was Patel and Bunjianovic. They published some research, two separate papers last year in JAMA, that showed that the nostrils of children and the nasal pharyngeal passage lacks the number of ACE2 receptors that adults have. And that began to explain to us why children were at such low risk to begin with. Children just do not have the apparatus to become readily infected and readily transmit. And that's one piece of the puzzle. I also looked at some research by Lusk, who also showed that the airways in children are already primed to sense this virus and had a much stronger early innate response to the SARS-CoV-2. That was point two for me as to why children were at such risk. I looked at research by Yang, and Yang told us that the blood that they collected from kids before SARS-CoV-2 started had the type of B-cell antibodies in it that showed that they were exposed to prior common colds and gave them some protection. That was potent, potent effort that the medical community knows. CDC understands. There's also research by Weiser and Faber that told us that the T-cells in children, when they looked at it, they were so naive and so untrained that that gave them an understanding of why children's immune system responded. Those four pieces of evidence to me, from a biological and a molecular point of view, I'm not even talking about the Danish study in the French Alps that showed children didn't spread. I'm not talking about the Ludvigsson study in Sweden that showed up 2 million Swede kids, no cases of death. I'm not even talking about the epidemiology. I'm talking about the molecular underlying biology. It shows that children do not get this infection readily and do not spread it. Children have no opportunity for benefit from these vaccines, only potential for harm. We must not allow our children to be vaccinated. And that's what I wanted to share today.
Dr. Paul.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Thanks.
I mean,
again,
he kills it every single time he's on.
You're following this guy. Obviously, his knowledge, his ability to be conversant in both the details but the high level about this, it's very compelling, which is why we had him on before. And I had doctors all across the country writing in to say, yeah, what Dr. Paul said is, I agree, I'm with it, and I think we'll have a lot more of that today, Clay.
No doubt. And look, I'm a parent. I believe in vaccines. My kids are vaccinated. They're not going to get the COVID vaccine. Because of everything he just laid out, you look at the data, they're not at risk from COVID. Why would you, for young kids, insist on a COVID vaccine? It's madness. You know what else is madness? Dr. Fauci's response to us, Buck. We're going to tell everybody what it was.
Maybe we'll have a fake Fauci, Clay. Fake he might Fauci come hang out with us.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.